as it relates to that discussion. Got a little bit of a respiratory problem. It's not anything contagious, but nonetheless, if you get me coughing here, you'll never get me stopped. So we'll just see how it goes. My wife and Alyssa are in Atlanta playing volleyball this weekend, and I got sick about the day they left. They left on Thursday, and I haven't had anybody take care of me. So I've been taking care of myself. I went to the doctor on Thursday. He gave me a prescription, and it was only for 500 milligrams of pill. That didn't seem like it was enough to me. So I went over to Walgreens and got me some medicine. I probably couldn't pass the drug test this morning if I had to, but I've got some stuff inside of me here. Some of that stuff's got that sleep medicine in there. I might fall asleep on you up here. If I do, y'all just come over here and kind of lay me down and tuck me in. I'll be okay. I'll wake up about 3-4 hours. I'll be okay. We'll see how it goes. We've got a lot of work to do here. We do want to finish a little section here on Joshua chapter 5. I want to get to Joshua chapter 6, which is the Battle of Jericho, but I can't leave that last little piece of Joshua chapter 5 alone. And so I need you to take a look with me there for a moment. Before you do that, I'd like for you to turn to 2 Kings chapter 6. I need to lay just a little bit of track before we actually get back to Joshua chapter 5. So I need you to go to 2 Kings chapter 6, if you would. 2 Kings chapter 6, kind of an interesting discussion with Elisha. And we want to pick it up in verse 8. Of course, the early part of that chapter is where the axe head floats in the river, or in the Jordan River. But then look what happens beginning about verse 8 with the Arameans. It says, "Now the king of Amram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, 'You know what I'll do? I'll set up my camp in such and such a place.' The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, Elisha sent word to the king of Israel, said, 'Beware of passing that place because the Midianites are going down there.' So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard for such places. This enraged the king of Amram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, 'I need you to tell me which one of us are traitors. Which one of us are on the side of the king of Israel?' And they responded by saying, 'Well, none of us, my lord, none of us are on their side. Well, we're all on your side.' But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, he tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your very bedroom." So the king of Israel always knows exactly what the king of Armenia is planning and plotting. So look at verse 13. The king says, "Well, go find out where he is," the king ordered, "so I can send men and capture him." The report came back, "He's in Dothan." Then the king sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and they surrounded the city. When the servant of the men of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots, they totally surrounded the city. "Oh my lord, what shall we do?" One of Elisha's servants said, "Oh my goodness, the whole city's surrounded here with all these horses and chariots and all these weapons of war. Elisha, what should we do?" Verse 16, he says, "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, "O Lord, open his eyes so he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As the enemy came down toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike these people with blindness." So he struck them with blindness, so Elisha had asked. Elisha told them, "This is not the place, this is not the road, this is not the city. We're not the ones you're looking for." And if you were to read the rest of the story, it says that, will you take us to where we need to go? And Elisha says, "Well, sure, I'll take you where you need to go." And so he leads these chariots, the Arameans, and this army of the Arameans, and he carries them to the city of Samaria where the Israelites have their forces. And when they get into the city, the king of Samaria says, "Do you want us to kill all these people?" And Elisha says, "No, I've delivered my hand as captives." But the main point here is the people who are with Elisha, those who are with Elisha, are more than those who are with this alien army. Now, go to Matthew chapter 26 very quickly. Matthew chapter 26. In verse 47, we're going to read of the rest of Jesus. Look what happens here. He says, while he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayal had arranged a signal with him. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. That's the one you want to arrest. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, greetings, Rabbi, and he kissed him. And Jesus replied, friend, do what you came to do. Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him with the one... One of Jesus' companions reached for a sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cut off his ear. But Jesus said to his servant, put your sword back in its place, Jesus said to him. For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put in my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way? Now, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14. 12 legions of angels, if Jesus wants them. Hebrews chapter 1 in verse 14. Of course, first chapter of Hebrews is all about the excellency and the exaltation of Jesus. And so, starting verse 6, it talks about the fact that let all God's angels worship Him. And speaking of angels, He said He made the angels, He makes His angels winds and His servants flames of fire. And then it talks about the throne of God, or how forever be established. Look down at verse 14. It says, are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who inherit salvation? Are not angels surrounding those who are intended to inherit salvation? So in three instances here in 2 Kings, in Matthew 26, and now in Hebrews, we read of supernatural forces or divine pleasures that belong to Jehovah that He can put at His disposal, His resources, that He can put at His disposal at a moment's notice to do His bidding. Now I want you to go back to Joshua chapter 5 with me. Now I want you to go to Joshua chapter 5. Oh, Joshua, in verse 13. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and he asked, are you for us or are you for our enemies? You think that's the right question? Brethren, once again, I'm doing 9% of work. I ask a question, that's 10% you can answer. Okay? Don't make me do 95% of the work. That's where I get stressed and hostile. You think that's the right question? That's not the right question. Okay? God going to tell him that is not the right question. And the reason Joshua asked that question is because now they've crossed over the Jordan River and they're sitting there up against Jericho and they've got the battle of Jericho coming up. And Joshua's just a touch worried. He knows that the forces that are inside the city and around Jericho are far superior than what he's crossed over the Jordan River with. And so he wants to know straightway, is this angel that he's looking at, are you on our side or are you on the enemy's side? Because if you're on the enemy's side, I got a bigger problem than I thought. But if you're on my side, I feel a little bit better about it. Well, here's the deal. The problem is, and the problem with the question is that Joshua thought that the taking of Jericho was his personal problem. That's why he was concerned about whose side this angel was on. Because he thought the taking of Jericho, he internalized that problem to be his personal problem. Now, churches would never do that, right? I mean, we'd never do that. Elders would never do that, would they? Elderships would never do that, would they? They would never assume that whatever they're facing is just their own personal problem and they need to take care of it. We'd never do that, would we? Joshua did. Joshua said, you know, I got Jericho before me. I just need to know, you know, and I'm like this at work. When I go to work, I mean, I gather my troops together, and I want to know what we're working with, right? What do we got, guys? Tell me what you found out. Tell me the numbers. Let me hear what we got. Because I want to know. If I'm going to an executive briefing, I want to know. Right? Joshua wanted to know. You for me or you against me? Now, here's the response of that angel. Look at the next verse there, verse 14. The angel says, neither. Neither. Joshua, I'm not for you, and I'm not against you. Now listen, it doesn't matter how holy the cause is, right? Because Joshua's on holy mission here, right? He's been chosen by God to replace Moses, so he's on a holy mission. But brethren, it doesn't matter how holy the mission is, we don't need to always go and try to get God's allegiance to our mission. Spirituality is not based on whether or not we can get God aligned with us. Our spirituality is based on the fact we decide to align with God. That's where spirituality comes from. And, you know, I introduced that kind of concept last week here, and we're going to further that concept. I'm going to tell you about spirituality today a little bit, kind of in a demeanor that we don't normally talk about. But I'm going to tell you where spirituality comes from. You want to be spiritual men, spiritual women? We're going to talk about where that comes from. And it doesn't come by trying to get God to align with what we want to do. Because this angel says neither. I'm neither for you or against you. Listen to what the angel says, though. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I've now come. Look what Joshua. Joshua falls on his face to the ground in reverence. And he asks him, well, what message does the Lord have for his servant? The commander of the Lord's army said, take off your shoes, for the place we stand is holy ground. Now, it's interesting in Joshua chapter 3 and in verse 7 that God said that He would exalt Joshua, right? Remember that? He said, this day I will begin to exalt you. How is Joshua being exalted here? How's he being exalted? Humble obedience, right? Humble obedience. Brethren, that's when we're exalted. We think exaltation, because of the world, the way has framed that out, we've got a little bit of confusion going on about what exaltation is. Got just a little bit of confusion in the body of Christ and in the world about what exaltation is. But this is where he's exalted. Obedience, when he bows down and says, okay, Lord, whatever you want me to do. There I am. As a matter of fact, you go to 1 Peter chapter 5, it says, cast all your cares and all your anxieties on who? On the Lord, right? Don't worry about it. Put it on the Lord. Let Him take care of it. Let Him take care of it. Now, we're going to go to Joshua chapter 6. Fall of Jericho. Now look, every one of us has studied this story when we were in Bible school. But before we read this chapter, I want to take a look. I want to tell you a little bit about Jericho here. We may not get done all that I want to get done today. So we've got a preacher who preaches long, elders who pray too long, and song leaders who lead too many songs, and then we don't have no time for the teacher. Outside of that, I don't want you to think there's an ounce of criticism here. Sorry, Riley. Yeah. Don't I know? There'll be four or five people catch your back door and say, you can't say that either. I know this is exactly the way this works. Okay. It is what it is, isn't it, sometimes? It is what it is. You know, I started calling my mom. I told the audience, for some of you who just got into class, got this respiratory thing going. I almost called my mom since my wife's out of town and asked her for help, but... My mom doctored me when I was growing up. I'm lucky to be alive, man. I'm serious. She used to have us eat Vicks VapoRub. Y'all ever done that? Well, she's shaking her head. Well, look, lady, if you read on the side of the jar, it says, do not swallow. And the word petroleum underneath of that should mean something to you. I'm telling you the truth. My real father, my biological father, was a detective at a police department. He always had whiskey in his pocket. I think that's why Mom and Dad didn't get along too well. And she used to mix that with lemon juice and sugar, and she'd give it to us at night for a cough, a hot toddy, right? I don't think it did anything. Got us drunk, made us sleep. I don't think it helped. And then she used to put vapor rub on my chest. You remember that? We used to do that all over, and we had that freestanding stove, that gas stove, and she'd heat that towel, and she'd fold up, throw it on my chest. And it worked okay after the hair quit sizzling underneath of it, you know. Whoa, Mom, you know. It'll make you feel better, honey. So I didn't call Mom. I thought I'd just rather die with it than I had to have Mom treat me. I'm sorry, I didn't come here to entertain. It's going to be a long class, but I got this thing going on. I didn't want anybody else to teach this lesson, but I probably shouldn't be teaching it either here. Anyway, listen, let's get serious here and see if we can do some Bible study. Man, I'm glad I didn't call Mom. Jericho is 10 miles north of the Dead Sea. So north, 10, and the Jordan River is 6 miles over. You got that? It's kind of important here, so hold on to those two facts. 10 miles north of the Dead Sea, and 6 miles over is the Jordan River. Here is a modern view of the city of Jericho. And it's the land looks just like he expected to, right? We've seen some of this land before. And interesting enough, the city is 846 feet below sea level. It's the lowest city on the face of the earth. I mean, there ain't no place lower. So it's 10 miles north of Jordan River, 10 miles north of Dead Sea, 6 miles west of the Jordan River, 846 feet below sea level. And you see the mountain ranges around there? You see that? You remember Rahab the prostitute when the two spies came over and she sent them over into the mountains so that the troops wouldn't find them? Well, they suspect that those mountains over in the distance over there is where they were sent to. This here is it's actually the Mountain of Temptation. They think it's right outside Jericho. They think this is where Jesus actually confronted Satan with the temptation up in the mountains. I don't know that for a fact, but they suspect it to be the case. The pixels on the picture, because I expanded it, are not too good, but nonetheless, it is what it is. Now, this is a picture, modern-day Jericho. It's right in the heart of the Jordan Valley, right in the heart of the Jordan Valley. And we know the Jordan Valley is extremely fertile, right? And you can see, as a matter of fact, if you wanted to do some work on the Internet, you'd see that people are carrying large piles of bananas and all kinds of fruit around everywhere. I mean, very, very fertile land. The average temperature in the wintertime is 59 degrees. The average temperature in the hot time is 88 degrees. And, you know, it's sunny every day of the year. It's called the City of the Palms. Just a beautiful city. It's a heathen city. It's always been a heathen city. It's a heathen city today. But it really is a beautiful city. And very, very luscious in all kinds of vegetation. And that's important, because even though it was destroyed here, even going to go read in Joshua chapter 6, it's been destroyed. The fact of the matter is, it was in such a rich, fertile area that every time, you know, as the Israelites were thrown out of the country because of their sin, and every army that came in thereafter, they would come in and take this city, because it was just so luscious and beautiful and so vibrant, you know, because of the fruits and everything. They just loved it. You got it? Okay. So here is I'm not going to get this right, but I think this is the En El Sautron spring. It's one of the springs. There's a spring that sits right outside of Jericho, and this baby pumps out. Listen to this. You got this? Remember telling you a story about moving the irrigation pipes? Listen, this spring right here pumps out 1,000 gallons of water a minute. You got that? I mean, this baby right here is churning water. And it's sufficient in water that it irrigates 2,500 acres for them. So even in the dry times, even in the dry times of the country over there, they've got this spring that does amazing things. They've got some wadis, the Wadi El Iris is north, but there's some other wadis that are in there, and these little lake-like areas, and they flow off into the Jordan River. So even though it's very arid around that area, this particular location of Jericho is very well watered. The temperature is just right. Everything's just as it should be, and really, really a pristine area. Herod's, this right here is a drinking fountain, or a fountain that was produced by Herod. This is the Herod of the New Testament, but he came in and took over the city of Jericho right after the Maccabeans. So probably the Herods came in there probably around 200, 250 years before Christ. So we're a long ways from the destruction of Jericho. But as I said, it was constantly rebuilt. They just go in there and rebuild on top of the ruins over and over and over again because of the lusciousness of the valley. Now, this is an image, and it's very, very poor pixels, I'm sorry, but this is an artist's rendition, and I don't want you to pay a lot of attention to this, because I think it's pretty cheap, really, but but even though it's cheap, I wanted to give you a sense of what we're fixing to read in the book of Joshua here in Joshua chapter 6. And it kind of looks right, but it kind of looks wrong. And you'll understand that statement in just a moment, okay? But this is what I want you to get from this thing. I want you to know that when these guys were looking at the walls around the city here, they were looking, their heads were turned upward. I mean, they were looking a long ways up. I'm talking about some pretty tall walls here. You're gonna understand that comment in just a minute. Just bear with me. Just be patient. Okay, this right here is a pretty cool deal, even though you can't really see it. But it's pretty cool because it really does. It's an artist rendering. But I'm going to show you something real here in a minute. But it's an artist rendering, and it's real important because, does this thing have a pointer? Sweet. Okay, you see this right here? You got that? This right here, this is never mind. Let's go to something else. We'll come back to this. Don't worry, brethren. I got it. I just know where I'm going. I just didn't get it right, okay? This slide should have come first. Don't worry. I got it. Okay, so here's what I want you to see. This is the way that Jericho was kind of built. Wait a minute. Okay, so smart guys, right? They didn't have big excavation equipment, right? Right? But they had these engineers. And these engineers was a pretty smart guy. And so the king said, build a city, right? And build me a city so I can be defensible in this city. And so these guys go out and go, okay, well, what do we got to work with? And so they go out and survey the area. And this is what they would decide. They would say, well, you know, we got a nice gentle slope here coming down. What if we go in here and have our slaves slice off that slope right there and we'll build a retaining wall? Now, we do that here in the Woodlands, don't we? We build retaining walls, right? So, you know, I mean, not uncommon, right? I mean, you're an architect, Butch. It's possible, right? So you slice this off and, you know, you have somebody like you draw up some plans and you go in there and put some bricks in there and stone or whatever, and you build a retaining wall. So this retaining wall right here is already 12 to 15 feet in height. Now look at the slope of the land, right? So if you're going to take this city, it's already an uphill battle. I mean, there's nothing easy about this. But then you put on top of that a retaining wall here of stone, and it's already 12 to 15 feet high. Then you get your slaves to go up here, and this is mud brick. This right here is stone, and you'll understand that in just a moment. This is real stone right here. This right here is mud brick, red clay brick, whatever it is, you know. And so they have their slaves now build on top of this retaining wall, on top of this land, this other wall here. This thing, this baby right here, 6 feet thick, and it's 20 to 26 feet high. If you add those two numbers together, that'd kind of be a tall wall to get over, wouldn't it? I mean, some of you guys, even the best of your health, ain't going to get there. I know there's no hope for me. This fat boy here ain't going to get there. But I'm telling you, that is a tall hill by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the thing is, then they have this little area right here. So let's suppose that somebody could devise a way to get over this wall. Let's just suppose that could happen. Some smart people make this happen. Then it's all uphill after you get through the climb. It's all uphill, and then they put another wall up here. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to tell you, this wall right here is about 18 feet tall. All right? And so then, if you add all this stuff up, This thing here, from the bottom of this retaining wall, so we'd have to level this thing out. Are you with me? You'd have to level this thing out. But if you leveled this thing out, it'd be 46 feet from this point up to this point, plus the other 12 or 18 feet on top of that, whatever they decide to build. So, I mean, Jericho is really, really, really defend. I mean, it's really got a good defense around it, right? I mean, it's not going to be a simple task. And we're going to see that God's going to have these guys march around and around the city. Now, guys, if you live here in the Woodlands, we have these walking paths, right? And I've started running here lately on those walking paths. And it's got a little bit of incline, a little bit of upline. I'm not a very good runner. You don't want to run with me either because you don't want to run with me. I'm a sloppy runner. By the time I get through running, I'm usually spitting and slobbering and stuff. But I mean, I'm doing that. No, I mean, there's a point to that statement. What I'm trying to say to you is I'm a real poor runner. I'm kind of delirious by the time I get through usually. And these are on pretty level paths, right? With small inclines and small uplines, right? That's what I'm trying to say to you. And I'm really bad on good ground. These guys here are going to walk around the city not on good ground, right? They don't have a run. The Woodlands didn't go there and build a walking path for them around that city. They're going to march around this thing, and it's going to be tough marching. And while they're marching around, they can see this retaining wall, they can see this wall, and if they're out in the distance over here, my pointer's over there now, then they can see that upper wall too, and they're going, oh my goodness, how are we going to do this? I mean, this is a big mess, right? It's a big deal, okay? Okay, you still with me? Okay. Okay, so let's back up now. So now this makes sense, right? So they march around, and they do it in silence, and then one day they get real noisy and loud, and God causes the walls to fall down. Now, when the walls fall down, not... not the retaining wall. The retaining wall doesn't appear to fall down. But these mud brick walls right here that were built, they begin to fall down. Now, you remember Rahab's house was up on the wall? Remember that? They actually used the, like right here and down in here, you see that house? And they would use the defense wall as the back wall of their house. You got that? So, the city would allow them to build up against the walls. And so it would make sense that Rahab's house would be on the wall, which is exactly what we read. Now, interesting enough also, they haven't done a lot. The government over there won't allow them to do a lot of excavation, but they've allowed them to do some excavation. And of the excavation they've allowed them to do, interesting enough, they found that the retaining wall appears to still be intact. But these mud brick walls right here seems to be the walls that have collapsed. And if this wall collapsed down this way, then what would you naturally have? I didn't hear a clear answer. I'd like a clear answer. Yeah, a walking path. Like the woodlands. She lives in the woodlands, doesn't she? A walking path about 6 foot wide, cement. No. You'd have a ramp, right? You'd have a ramp, right? I mean, if this wall collapsed over, all of a sudden you'd have a ramp up into the city. And you know, interesting enough, in the excavations, they found like stone jars and stuff like that. And these stone jars had blackened burn marks over it, just exactly like Joshua said in Joshua chapter 6, where it said it burned up the city. Isn't that interesting? I mean, the archaeologist spade over and over again proves without a doubt that God's word is true. Now, keep going with me here. So you got this. Brother, you're going to go to heaven. I don't care what you've done. You're in. You're in. If you get there and he's got a problem, have him... Well, no, probably don't want to call me.
Hey, Dave.
Somebody
make another point. It's interesting. This is the
thing. Yeah. Yeah, you want to teach? That Todd, he's something, isn't he? No, you're exactly right. I'm going to show that to you, brother. Thank you. I love old Todd to death. He's a good man. So, so here's some engineering work. This is not archaeologist or excavationist. This right here is some engineering work. They went over there, and guess what they found? They found, you see where we said the wall fell down? And it would make a natural ramp up, or a walking path for those who live in the woodlands, but a natural ramp up right here so it could take the city and overwhelm the city. They found out here these stone chips and this fallen red brick, just like old Todd said, fell right off on the outside here, and so they'd go right up into the city. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? And you go over there, listen, you go over there, and these guys, as a matter of fact, there was a set of excavation guys who went over there and... I think in the 90s, I believe. And they were Italians, and they were atheists, and they set out to prove that this element of the Bible was not true. And when they walked away, guess what they found? Every word of Joshua chapter 6 was confirmed. They found the burned timbers and the burned jars, and they were mystified the walls had fell out. They were mystified by the fact that this mud and everything mixed together used to be bricks. They were totally overwhelmed. So real interesting discussion here. This guy right here is a believer. I don't know that he's a Church of Christ guy, but he's obviously someone who has a strong belief in the Bible. And he is standing up against the retaining wall. You say, well, I thought the walls fell down. Yeah, not the retaining wall, right? the mud rock fell over the retaining wall. He's standing up against a retaining wall. On top of that retaining wall, then that slope that we showed you earlier up to the next wall exists above that. And here, excuse me, down here is the retaining wall. And then the mud wall was on top of this right here. And you see now it's become kind of a tourist attraction. And this right here was actually the reason that, okay, stay with me here. You see this tire right here? You see that? The lookout tire right here? They surmised that this right here was one of those lookout tires that had a tunnel down through it over here into the city so they could alert people. Pretty cool, isn't it? Pretty cool. Now, this city right here is really a valuable city. Look, it's got great irrigation. It's got a great area to defend. As a matter of fact, Alexander the Great, when he was conquering this area, came to Jericho and stayed here for a long, long, long time. Great, great city, powerful city. Now, what's it famous for today? Gambling. Seriously, it's full of casinos. Yeah, as heathen as it's ever been. As heathen as it's ever been. Okay, I've got 15 minutes. We're not going to get to Joshua chapter 6, but we do have to do something here. Okay, we do have to do something here. Before I get to Joshua chapter 6, I wanted to talk. I'm just going to be out of time. I'm sorry. I wanted to talk about the fact of judgment. Now look, I understand that it's a whole lot more pleasant for us to talk about things that align with our goodwill, right? I mean, I'm much more in tune to talking about salvation because that aligns with my self-interest. You understand that? And I'm much more in tune to talking about redemption and forgiveness and grace because all those things really, 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 really align with my self-interest, okay? Now, I have faced judgment. And judgment's not pleasant. In the fourth grade, I got judged. I got down beside my desk and I turned around, and back then the girls wore a skirt, and something caught my eye, and the teacher caught me with my eye being caught in the fourth grade, and I got sent down to the principal, and the principal was T.G. McCord, and T.G. McCord was one of the elders of the church. And so it didn't work out for me in any way. And if I thought judgment was bad at school, I wish I'd never gone home that day. Ever. Ever. I thought they were going to make me stand up and apologize to the whole congregation. You know, so we face judgment. We don't like judgment, right? I mean, really, because judgment, if you think about it, judgment really doesn't feel like it aligns with our interests, but it really, really does. It really, really, really does. But we don't spend a lot of time there. And while generally the book of Joshua chapter 6 is really talked about and taught on the concept of faith, right? Look at the faith they had in marching around that city and not seeing any results. And look at the faith they had in being quiet. And look at the faith, right? That's generally, and that's what we teach our kids in Bible class. That's a good thing. It's a good thing. And it's true. All that's true. And that's the right that's one of the contexts that the Joshua chapter 6 ought to be taught out of. I want you to know that. But Joshua chapter 6 ought to also be taught out of the context of judgment. Okay? Out of the context of judgment. Because it really is about judgment. I just can't do it. I better do this, and then we'll get this right next week. So I want to tell you, I'm tempted though. But so what I'm going to do is I want to tell you about four kinds of judgment, and then next week we're going to study Joshua chapter 6. I think that's what we're going to do. I want you to go to Revelation chapter 20 with me, very quickly. Revelation chapter 20. I just tell you this, if we're going to have a preacher who preaches too long, I'm glad he's a good preacher. Because I've had some preachers who preach too long, they're really, really bad preachers. And you're going, is he ever going to stop preaching? So Ken, you're a good one. You're a good one, brother. I'm glad you're here. I'm really glad you and your family are here. In Revelation chapter 20 and verse 11, read with me here. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it, earth and sky, fled from his presence. And there was no place for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were open. Another book was open, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And each person was judged according to what he had done. Each person was judged according to what he had done. Each person was judged according to what he had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death. If anyone's name is not found, was not found where? Written where? What happened? It's thrown in the lake of fire. Judgment comes to the unbeliever, doesn't it? You got that? One type of judgment is for the unbeliever. You understand? One type of judgment is for the unbeliever. If you're an unbeliever here today and your name is not written in the book of life, you are in trouble. And you are in serious trouble. Do not take these words lightly. You are in serious trouble. Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 3. If you're here without Jesus and you'd like to find Jesus and you know you're in trouble, there are a lot of people here who will help you. So just find us. Find Ken or myself or an elder. And we'll, if you're here and you're not saved, you talk to us. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 10. I don't know all that this says. This scripture right here is a little bit of a mystery for me, but I want you to read it with me and I want to make a point out of it. I think it's valid. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation. I mean, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10. By the grace of God, by the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Christ Jesus. If any man builds on this foundation, using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. Now, in Revelation chapter 20, each man was going to be rewarded according to his works. Here, each man's work is going to be tested by fire. Verse 14, if what he has built survives, he will receive his reward. Right? If we're building on the foundation of Jesus. So in Revelation chapter 20, we have judgment of the non-believer, right? And his name's not in the book of life. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 10 and following, we have a judgment of believers, and for believers who are building on the foundation of Jesus Christ, they're going to receive their reward, and their name's written where? Their name's written in the book of life, right? So two very distinct elements of judgment, right? The unbelievers in trouble. Those who are building on the foundation of Jesus Christ, they're in pretty good shape. Now go to Acts chapter 5 with me. Acts chapter 5. Interesting, another kind of judgment. You know the story, right? Chapter 5, verse 1, Acts 5, 1. Now, a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself, but brought the rest and put it at the apostles' feet. Then Peter said, Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you've lied to the Holy Spirit and kept for yourself some of the money you received for the land? Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? What made you think of doing such a thing? You've lied not only to men, but to God. When Ananias heard this, he fell down dead, and great fear seized all that had happened. I mean, this guy fell. Now, and look how stupid his wife is. After about 3 hours later, his wife came in, verse 7. Not knowing what had happened, Peter asked her, tell me, is the price you and Ananias got for the land? Tell me. Is this the price you and Ananias got for the land? Now, she should have asked two questions. One, where's my husband? Right? And number two, what did he say? Right? She should have asked those two questions. But she didn't have time to wait, right? She said, yes, that's the price. And he said, well, the guys who carried your husband out are the same people who are going to be carrying you out. So judgment again, right? Personal judgment, right? Very personal, very exacting judgment here, right? Okay? Now, I want to go to an area called what I would call national judgment. I don't think that's the right name for it, but I don't know what else to call it. In Revelation chapter 20, we talk about judgment of the non-believer. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we have judgment of the believers, if they can be refined by fire. Here we have some very personal judgment that God seems to step in, and when people get in the way of the gospel, it looks like to me, or get in the way of what he's trying to do, or when he wants to make a point, he handles them very efficiently. And then there's this other thing called national judgment. Like I say, it's not the right name, but I don't know what else to call it. And so don't go there, but if you go over to Genesis chapter 6, but don't go there, but if you went over to Genesis chapter 6, we have the flood, right? We have the flood. And I'm sure, now we know the story of the flood. We know that Noah was saved and he had to build an ark to be saved and so on and so forth. And it says that every thought of every man was evil before God, and he was just sick and tired of it. He got fed up of it, right? And as a result of that, God brought judgment on the entire world through a global flood. Genesis chapter 6. If you go to Genesis chapter 18, there's the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And you know the bargaining that went on there with Abraham and God. And Abraham said, well, you know, if I could find 50, maybe 40, maybe 30, maybe, you know, 20. What do you think, God? Could we get down to 10? And God says, you know, if you can find a few, I won't destroy them. Of course, God knew, right? And I don't care what else you say about, you know, a lot of people say it was inhospitality. I'm going to tell you what's going on. I'm going to tell you what's going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, homosexuality and sensuality and all kinds of things that shouldn't be happening around sexuality. And God spoke forever about homosexual tendency. I mean, he said all he never needed to say right there was Sodom and Gomorrah. And he destroyed that city. He brought judgment on an entire city of people. Now, was everybody in there sensual? I don't know. I don't know about everybody. But those cities were so wicked that God had his fill of it, right? He got sick and tired of it, right? And brethren, I'm telling you, in Joshua chapter 6, what's going to happen? In Joshua chapter 6, what's going to happen on Jericho is that God's going to destroy Jericho, an entire city, save Rahab and her family, because they are a heathen nation. Now, I'm going to tell you why it's going to happen. I'm going to tell you why it's going to happen. God's holy. Did you hear that? God's holy. It's His earth. It's His heaven. It's His universe. He gets to make the rules. And He's holy. And because He's holy, unholiness cannot reside where He resides. It cannot. And don't you think for one minute that it can. It cannot. And God has a people who He's claimed called the Israelites, and He's taken them into an area of land, a piece of real estate that He intends to make holy. And it is filled today with unholy people, right? It is filled with people in the city of Jericho who are unholy. And God's going to drive those unholy people out of His holy land for His holy people. That's exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen. Now I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to ruin my lesson for next week. But next week we're going to look at Deuteronomy, Leviticus 18, and you'd do me a great favor if you'd read at least the first 17 verses of Leviticus 18. I'm going to read them in class, but I'm going to read them quick. And when you read them, you're going to know why I'm going to read them quick. And then we're going to look at 2 Samuel chapter 24. And then we're going to wrap up Joshua chapter 6. That's next week. Brethren, let me tell you, as we conclude here, and I'm going to really make the point next week, that God is very, very serious about judgment. And in the context of being serious about judgment, that makes Him serious about obedience, doesn't it? You understand that? If He's serious about judgment, He only judges where people are disobedient. And therefore, He must be very, very serious about obedience. And if you want to be a spiritual man or a spiritual woman this week, if you really want to be a spiritual man or spiritual woman this week, be obedient. I mean, husbands, when you and your wife are fighting and you want to bring up every dead dog that's ever been said, and you do that, don't do it. Be obedient to the Word of God and surrender to your wife. Surrender, just like Ken talked about, surrender to your wife and be respectful. And for you women who lord over your husbands sometimes and who want to dominate the home, you need to stop doing that. You need to stop. You need to become obedient to the Word of the Lord, because He values obedience. And He will judge those who are disobedient. See, He takes judgment very, very seriously. I'm not sure that we do sometimes, but He does. It's a serious matter with Him. And He only judges those who are disobedient. You want prosperity and happiness and contentment? Disobedience is not the place you find that. Talk to anybody who lived in Jericho, and they're going to tell you that. God values obedience. Next week, Joshua chapter 6. Thanks for your time. I'm sorry I didn't get where I needed to be today.